Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey, it's State of State. We got your Nittany Line update. It's a football discussion with Tom and Justin. So kick back and press play.
With former Penn State and NFL defensive back Justin King, I'm Tom Hanifin. This is State of State. This podcast is presented by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season. Major League Baseball, golf, the NBA, and NHL playoffs especially. All the latest stats, news, and scores are available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to betonline.ag today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. State of State is presented by BetOnline. The game starts here. Are you looking for a higher potential return on your savings? Turn to our sponsor, Save. As an SEC-registered investment advisor, Save safely combines the best parts of saving and investing with its market savings program. Market savings is a savings product that provides you with market returns instead of interest. The returns come from diversified investment portfolios based on your individual investment profile. The return from the investments is paid to you at the end of the selected investment term. But investing comes with risk, right? Well, with Save, your deposit is FDIC insured and never used for any investments. The current variable APYs are 9.07% for the one-year product and 7.9% for the five-year product. So what does this cost you? Well, Save only charges a fee when your investments make you money. To learn more or to sign up, visit joinsave.com/state. That's joinsave.com/state. The link to the website is in the description of this podcast. State of State invites you to join Save. Hi, everyone. Welcome to State of State. I'm Tom Hanifin, flying solo today. Wanted to take this opportunity to reflect on everything that's going on with Penn State football, especially now that the spring transfer portal window has officially closed as of Tuesday, April 30th. So all the names that could potentially go into the portal are in. No more entries as of now. So Penn State can have their opportunity still to go and get some players. The challenge is just ultimately, do they want to take a flyer on somebody to bring in this late in the year? And I know it's like, yeah, training camp's a ways away, but still to get somebody in campus in mid-May, it makes a real challenge for the coaching staff. So altogether, wanted to take this opportunity to look at the players for Penn State that did go into the transfer portal. A lot of you know who those people are, and evaluating those positions. Are those positions of need? Are those positions that Penn State should absolutely go fill in the transfer portal? Or should they stick with what they have right now? And on top of that, outside of those positions that lost people to the portal, what other positions could Penn State potentially look at as transfer portal fixes? Thank you for tuning in. Like, comment, subscribe, turn on notifications, rate us as well, and check us out on social media on X, Instagram, and TikTok at State of State Pod. I think when you talk about Penn State and the transfer portal window for this spring, it begins and ends with Keandre Lambert-Smith, the wide receiver who is now transferred to Auburn and potentially will be catching passes from former Michigan State quarterback Peyton Thorne under Hugh Freeze this upcoming year. So I'm very curious to see how that transition goes for Keandre Lambert-Smith. A lot of people might have that argument about Big Ten to SEC, but really it's a neck up thing for Keandre Lambert-Smith. It's something that Justin and I have talked about a lot on this show, is the big playability is there for Keandre Lambert-Smith. It just disappears for games on end, unfortunately. We saw it plenty of times this past season. We thought 2022 was the beginning of something special for him to elevate himself to become the number one wide receiver for Penn State. And that was the anticipation going into 2023. And oddly enough, while it was the anticipation, there were plenty of people within the program, outside the program, who saw flashes from Dante Cephas last summer thinking, man, this could be the number one wide receiver. There'll be competition for that. Two really solid guys. And ultimately, Dante Cephas, the Kent State transfer, just never really transitioned and got acclimated in a way that would provide meaningful production for Penn State football in the passing game. So it's just a very complicated situation. And then on top of that, yes, you lose Keandre Lambert-Smith to the portal. Malik Mega goes into the transfer portal. I know there's a lot of Penn State fans who might not necessarily know Malik Mega all that well. A Canadian prospect who came in, ton of size, all the athleticism in the world, just didn't really put it together at Penn State as a wide receiver, as a polished member of this team. And now that he's into the transfer portal, according to Joel Haas of the Daily Collegian and some other outlets as well, and Malik Mega has reported them himself, Coastal Carolina, Delaware, Nevada, Bowling Green, and Florida A&M all reportedly or have offered Malik Mega. So giving a bit of an indication of some of the schools that are actually looking at Malik Mega. Now, there's plenty of people that might be, he always belonged to that level. He should have never been at Penn State. It's so hard to say. There's so many instances that we've seen fantastic talent come from small schools and go on to huge things in the National Football League. It's just a matter of the right fit. I think an interesting thing altogether with this Malik Mega called experiment is Penn State potentially reevaluating the way that they recruit into Canada. Now, they obviously had success recruiting into Canada. Look at Jesse Lucchetta, Theo Johnson, who just got drafted. There's plenty of other examples, but it's just the name too. They've had success there, and it's the shrinking of the map altogether in college football is that these teams have the resources to get on a private plane and fly from State College, Pennsylvania into Canada to go get this talent and to bring them to the United States and get them in front of a lot more eyeballs. Great example of this many, many years ago at this point was Alabama going to Hawaii for Tua Tagovailoa and his brother for that matter. And even before that, Marcus Mariota at Oregon, the map has shrunk. However, it's something Justin and I have continued to talk about in regard to NIL and the amount of funds that these schools can raise in order to be competitive, recruit, and maintain talent. And it's something that's come up quite a bit with Penn State, and it's a major concern is seeing the way that, you know, something Justin and I talked about on our last episode is that Ohio State allegedly spent $34 million this past cycle on bringing in coaches and players into their program, whether they be transfers or recruits out of high school. Penn State's not throwing around that kind of money. This is something that last season, numbers in the range of $1 to $2 million were thrown out there in terms of what Penn State had potentially raised, and not necessarily the football program, but maybe just Happy Valley United, individual donors. It's very murky. And I do really hope that there's going to be some sort of regulation and potentially a salary cap pro style rules that go into all this so that ultimately Penn State football can be potentially more competitive with these juggernauts within their own conference who apparently have donors who have no problem shilling out tons of money. It's the real challenge about all this. So I do think Penn State is going to have to reevaluate, okay, how often are we going into Canada to go get talent? And Malik Mega being a good case study in that, good kid from everything that has been said about him within the program. There's no ill will or malice or anything like that. It just didn't work out. So it's a matter of you do roll the dice to a degree, but it's reevaluating that. And also just to round out the number of players that have gone into the portal for Penn State, Devon Townley Jr., again, a name that maybe a lot of Penn State fans don't necessarily know, didn't get a ton of playing time. I believe it is listed as a junior at this point. Redshirt sophomore, excuse me. It just never really materialized, has the size, has some athleticism. It just didn't really all come together. Is now his second time into the transfer portal. So some indecision there and just trying to make the right choice for himself. And Penn State has been very supportive and welcoming him back, obviously, last year. So I sincerely hope Devon Townley Jr. finds the right place for himself. Is it a big hit to the defensive line? In terms of bodies, in terms of potential depth, sure, but ultimately in terms of what we're going to see on the field on Saturdays in 2024, there shouldn't be that big of a dent. Altogether, looking at Lambert-Smith, Mega, and Townley Jr. going into the portal, for me, it's overall looking at the way that this program is trying to recruit talent, whether it be from the portal, from high school, and then maintaining that talent. The term Moneyball comes to mind. And because of some of the alleged numbers that have been thrown out there, and again, there's no real transparency from any of these colleges in college football right now in terms of, well, how much should you spend? And it was like, well, I think it was this. I heard this guy say this. It's, you have to take it for what it's worth. But if Penn State is going the money ball route, it's concerning. And then you're spending potentially big money to go get people out of the portal this past winter. And by big money, I have no idea what that number could be, but I imagine Julian Fleming had a price tag attached to him. So you're looking at a guy like Fleming, for instance, and Nolan Rucci is another guy you're hoping can come in and solidify one of the tackle positions. Tackle's a question, but let's focus on wide receiver. The fact that Keandre Lambert-Smith went into the portal and there was word coming out of the program that Penn State was potentially looking into the transfer portal this past window for the number one wide receiver. It should worry people, and it worried me. At the same time, the way that I see how this offense potentially could be constructed under Andy Kotelnicki, perhaps the pressure will be off of the wide receivers, and I genuinely like everything that I've seen on tape about Andy Kotelnicki, all the things that have been said and written about him, the way that he presents himself, the way he talks about his offenses, playing to the strengths of his personnel. And yes, Penn State is going to have the base sets and the type of personnel that they want to use ultimately. James Franklin has made that very clear over the years what he wants to do. But thinking about what the strength of this offense really is at this point in time, you know, granted, the blue-white game, it's too early to tell. There's a lot of installation going on, so you can't really exactly tell what this offense could be in 2024. We'll have a better understanding when information starts to come out of camp in August. But for me, I look at this and I'm like, okay, the interior of the offensive line, the two guard spots and center, I personally like. Nick Dawkins is the anticipated center. Now, I know a lot of people are like, well, he didn't start last year. That was Hunter Norzad, and he didn't start the year before that. Still cycled in, got his reps, and is extremely experienced. I believe a super senior. So you're in a situation where you've got a guy who has experience and apparently has been a very vocal leader. Landon Tengwall speaks glowingly of him. So Nick Dawkins at center, right? Left guard, J.B. Nelson did not compete in the blue-white game. I think he was a little banged up. J.B. Nelson played a lot at left guard last year, as did Vega Ioane. I don't see how you can go wrong with either of those options. And then you go over to right guard, Sal Wormley, super senior. I feel really good about that. Sal was a guy who missed 2022 with an injury, was anticipated to be a starter that year, was a starter in 2023, and performed very, very well. So your questions are going to be the tackle spots. There's Javen Williams, Anthony Donko, Nolan Rucci, Drew Shelton when he gets back healthy. All four of those guys and some other younger players are going to be in the mix. Don't forget about Cooper Cousins, the true freshman who apparently has drawn rave reviews. Again, we had Landon Tengwall on a few weeks ago and spoke very, very highly of Cooper Cousins. Is he going to start? I don't know, but it adds depth to the interior of that offensive line. So then it's, okay, we're building from the inside out. What could Drew use? Really good play action passing game, right? Or a really good running game altogether. Probably the running game to set up the play action pass would make a ton of sense. So Nick Singleton, Catron Allen step in perfectly there. And then behind them, there's some excitement and some depth with Quentin Martin Jr., Cam Wallace, London Montgomery even potentially. So you're going to be able to put a lot of horses out on the track potentially. I feel very good about that for Penn State. And again, that's focusing on the running game. And it's something that Mike Yurcich wasn't really interested in doing. He wanted to air it out a little bit more. And it appeared, I think a lot of us thought going into 2023, that Drew Aller was the quarterback to do that. We were going to get a high-flying video game offense. And it just never played out that way. Part of that was some deficiencies at wide receiver. And part of that also, Drew's first full year as a starter. And the fact that it was, 26 touchdowns and two interceptions the entire season? It's a good start. Does it really blow you away? The touchdown to interception ratio does, but at the same time, there's a lot to be desired. And Drew has shown incremental progress altogether. So for me, my sincere hope is going into this year is to see a focus on the running game. And it does seem like that's going to be the case. But then when you turn your attention to wide receivers, I mentioned the fact that there's discussion of Penn State potentially looking into the portal in this past window for a number one wide receiver. It really makes you scratch your head about, well, what is Julian Fleming and Trey Wallace? Trey Wallace is concerning because of just injuries. Now, what we saw in the blue-white game, he was able to make people miss, and we haven't been able to really say that since Parker Washington and Jahan Dotson. So I'm not saying he's going to be in that category. Be great if he was. For me, I remember the middle of 2023 seeing how KLS would just disappear. I said on this show, I think Trey Wallace is the best wide receiver that Penn State has. So what does that make Julian Fleming? If Julian Fleming hasn't necessarily solidified himself and walked right in and been wide receiver number one, not that that was going to get handed to him, but has he earned it? Is it something that over the next few months, working over the summer with the rest of the offense or getting into August and this coaching staff really understanding what it has, does it blossom? It's possible. For me, I know there are a lot of fans, and obviously that discussion from within the program getting out of them potentially looking into the portal for a number one wide receiver. I think this wide receiver room that Penn State has is at a point where you just need to let it marinate. I don't see anybody that's in the portal as of right now for Penn State that you're going to grab and is going to shift the landscape of that room and bam, that guy's number one. If you feel differently, feel free to get in the comments section and tell me about it. But for me, I'm looking at the rest of this wide receiver room, Liam Clifford, Amari Evans, Caden Saunders, Malik McClain are the names that jump out of guys that you could potentially see rotating in 3, 4, 5, and 6, right? Now, there's a lot of other conversations about plenty of wide receivers in terms of you've got Jason Estrella, Jake Spencer, Ethan Black, Mekhi Flowers, Feaseu Olele, Logan Cunningham, Carmelo Taylor, Josiah Brown, Anthony Ivey, Tyler Johnson. There's all these maybes. Young maybes, and even a lot of the players that I just said potentially could fill out spaces 1 through 5. There's some maybes in there. Amari Evans is flashed, but needs to flash consistently. Malik McClain has the size, is still gaining experience, was at Florida State and transferred in last season, just like Dante Cephas transferred in, but trying to get his legs underneath him, I guess. I wouldn't say at this point, he probably should understand what things are, but you will go from Mike Yurcich's offense now to Andy Kotelnicki's offense. So there's a lot of change that goes with that. There are some things in the blue-white game where, personally, I was like, I'd like to see him be a big-body receiver, actually. And I know that's crazy to think for a dude that's like 6'4", but that corner pass in the end zone, going up and getting the ball as opposed for waiting it to come into your hands and not elevating and letting the corner's positioning beat you. There's some elements to be desired there. I think what people should be focusing on is Liam Clifford. Now, I know, yes, it would be great if Amari Evans and Caden Saunders, two younger players, ultimately jumped out and took that number three wide receiver job. But I think with Fleming and Wallace leading the charge, Liam Clifford, I've described him as Johnny on the spot. Think of a Wes Welker type, maybe not as much of a burner, but that guy who's just Mr. Reliable, that slot wide receiver, a possession wide receiver. He runs extremely good routes, very, very intelligent. He finds spaces in zone coverage very well. Yes, could have some issues with man coverage against certain players, but ultimately, I think him as a number three wide receiver is a safe option, a smart option at this point in time. And again, it's something that Justin and I have talked about on this show is that it's changing the way that we look at this offense is that, yes, wide receiver is not as strong as it could be. Tight end is. Tyler Warren, you feel very, very good about. Sat out the blue-white game. They obviously have big things in store for him. Khalil Dinkins and Rapalje, who I really liked. I think there are some elements of his game that need polishing, watching the blue-white game. Just understanding where he's got to be, like clearly was learning, and he and Drew Aller were trying to get on the same page, but already has a college body and college ability. Joey Schlaffer, for that matter, very nimble, long-armed, long-legged tight end who can do some things in the passing game. So I look more at the tight end room, and that's something James Franklin has done the entire time that he's been at Penn State, is trying to load up that tight end room and just win with mismatches. So personally, I look at the offensive side of the ball. It has to begin and end with the running game. So my concern in terms of should Penn State be going into the transfer portal and getting a wide receiver has been admittedly low. And there was not anybody in the portal, or currently in the portal for that matter, that, in the words of Justin King, changes the temperature of that wide receiver room altogether. State of State is a proud supporter of Blue White Outfitters. Blue White Outfitters was created as a retail shop meant to highlight the confidence, competitiveness, and fearlessness of the elite athletes found throughout the history of Penn State University. Check out their Lockdown U and Lawn Boys merchandise today. All sales from Blue White Outfitters directly benefit Penn State student athletes. Visit www.bluewhiteoutfitters.com today.
Looking at the defense, yes, Devon Townley Jr. into the portal. Is it the biggest loss altogether? Already talked about that. Not necessarily. But the strength is going to be in this secondary. And that's something that I know Penn State fans have been bagging on Johnny Dixon, Daquan Hardy, and Kalen King, considering the way that the NFL draft just went, saying that guys should have stayed, those sorts of things. Ultimately, there's a difference of opinion in the way the NFL evaluates them versus the way that they played in college. I think it's very short-sighted to look at what happened with the NFL draft and say that was the overall ability of Kalen King, Johnny Dixon, and Daquan Hardy, because we saw it for the better part of 2 years altogether at Penn State, how nobody threw at Kalen King. Johnny Dixon was arguably the best blitzing corner in America, operating especially under Manny Diaz. He was a nightmare for opposing offenses. And Daquan Hardy, one of the best slot corners that Penn State's potentially ever had, and was one of the best in the country over the last two seasons. And oh, by the way, added into his resume that he can return punts and kicks to great effect. So it's interesting to think about this secondary. It's like, well, how does that secondary get better? And honestly, the competition that they put in at cornerback is really fantastic. And again, I come back to this spring transfer portal window. I know there are a lot of Penn State fans saying, go get somebody, go get somebody. It doesn't mean that the fix is there. If anything, the fixes were found in the winter transfer portal window for Penn State at a lot of different positions. And even if they aren't fixes in terms of, oh, we got a star who's going to lock us down at left tackle, for instance, in Nolan Rucci, and we have our number one wide receiver in Julian Fleming. He's going to catch 80 passes this year, something like that. You add a depth and competition to a lot of different positions to ultimately keep the standard for those rooms higher than it could have been with the subtractions that you got this year. Corner was one of those positions where AJ Harris from Georgia, Jalen Kimber from Florida, who especially has played a lot of ball. Harris is still some years of eligibility left altogether, but has played exceptionally well and is somebody that Terry Smith and company have spoken very highly of. People were sleeping on the fact that Audavian Collins was somebody who was picked up last year in the transfer portal from Mississippi State and has been shining. There's all of a sudden this great depth at defensive back, especially a corner, plus Cam Miller, plus Zion Tracy. It's very encouraging altogether. I think there's a lot of directions that this team could go. Also, Antoine Belgrave Shorter, I don't want to rule him out either. I believe we had Daquan Hardy on the show, and he was somebody that was saying Penn State fans should be paying attention to this upcoming year. I think it's the fact that Penn State can go three safeties deep. That should be really encouraging for everybody. Zaki Wheatley, Jalen Reed, and KJ Winston, who was freaking outstanding last year as such a young player, so early into his time as a college athlete. Very encouraged to see where KJ Winston could go. So, and even King Mack, somebody who might not necessarily be ready to be the starter, a number one guy at safety, but I hope to see him on the field because he's somebody who's drawn comparisons to a Jaquan Brisker. Don't want to anoint him or anything, but just in terms of style of play, in terms of his violence with which he plays. That depth at safety and that depth at corner, considering the way the modern game is played, should make people feel a lot better. Now, the front four, I'm personally very excited about, especially the way that Amin Vanover was all over the place in the blue-white game. Has he taken that leap? Is he going to start over Abdul Carter or deny Dennis Sutton at defensive end? I don't necessarily think so. If one of those two positions was maybe going to be flipped, I would say potentially it's deny Dennis Sutton taking a backseat to Amin Vanover, but that might be something where it's a case-by-case basis. And it's the ability for the defense and Tom Allen to trot out a lot of different pass rushers. The interior of the defensive line is still a position where I'm in like, but I'm not in love. And there's experience. It's just a matter of true game changers being there at that position. Yes, Sakeem Beeman and Devon Elise have a lot of experience. Zane Durant, I think, is yet to really put it all together. Really showed potential in his first few years here at Penn State and still has so much of that. I'm really curious to see when that all comes together for him. I am interested to see Caleb Artis is somebody that I know there isn't a ton of conversation about him, but just in terms of his overall enormity, I think there's something to be interesting there. 6'4", 317 pounds as a redshirt sophomore. So you have some interesting pieces there to work with. Defensive tackle, outside of that, Alonzo Ford Jr., hopefully people remember last year, transferred from Old Dominion. Sam Siafa, Xavier Gilliam, Ty Blanding, Liam Andrews, DeAndre Cook, T.A. Cunningham, who has a lot of intrigue, and Koziah Azard, who's also going to be one of those top four defensive tackles and had a lot of experience last year. So there's depth at defensive line. Linebacker, I know, is naturally where people are going to point to, but it does sound like the way that Tom Allen's going to construct this defense is going to be to hopefully attempt to mask some of those deficiencies. And deficiencies is maybe not even the right word. It's just unproven commodities. And we're still waiting to see what happens there. Kobe King seems like a lock to be a linebacker on the field at any given time. I personally want to see more of Tony Rojas. And I know Tamir Robinson is certainly somebody that's intrigued a lot of Penn Staters, fans and people inside the program. He's certainly done well, it sounds like, during this spring practice period, winter workouts, and now as we're getting closer and closer to training camp. So I continue to look at what the transfer portal window meant to Penn State, and I can understand this knee-jerk reaction for all of us as fans, where we're hoping to see some sort of activity. It's almost like free agency in the NFL. Oh, we didn't do anything, so we didn't get better. I don't know if that's necessarily the case for Penn State. Looking at the overall field for the Big Ten, did they need to go into the portal? I don't know if there was the talent in the portal necessarily there for Penn State to go get, for them to suddenly be in the conversation with Ohio State, Michigan, and Oregon this upcoming year. Penn State's slotted there, for my mind, at 4 in the Big Ten, and even that is going to be a dogfight because the conference has just gotten so much more competitive. So again, I just don't think there was the talent there in this spring transfer portal window for Penn State to make some sort of enormous leap to all of a sudden jettison them into that conversation of, oh, they could win the Big Ten. Will this team be better than last year? Remains to be seen. I think the fact that you have so many moving parts, especially with coordinators, Andy Kotelnicki coming in, hopefully putting in a new look for this offense altogether, and understanding that when it comes to installing a new playbook, there's a real challenge, especially if for a quarterback. So what Drew Aller does in the month of September is going to be very, very telling for all of us. And frankly, leaning on that running game, leaning on your experience within the offensive line, I think is going to be just so critical. But there's just, it's a different feeling than last offseason. I know everybody was jacked up thinking this team could potentially win the Big Ten, make the college football playoff, be in the national title game, all sorts of things like that. That pressure, that hype, that expectation is not there for Penn State. And it could be a good thing. And I know there's Penn State fans are saying, well, that's not a good thing because we should be more competitive than that. Hard for me to argue that. But you're understanding the landscape with which Penn State is playing. Moneyball, potentially. This is a challenging time for Penn State. But even looking at the transfer portal, I just never felt that this window in the spring was going to be the chance for Penn State to have that shot of adrenaline in the arm, or even a Band-Aid necessarily to fix a position of need. Yes, tackle, linebacker, wide receiver, certainly positions that I think Penn State fans wanted to see something addressed. And that just hasn't happened. If it does, very curious to see what that person is. But ultimately, I don't think it's necessarily going to vastly change the performance of this offense or defense going into 2024. So that's my ranting for today. Please tell me what you guys think in the comments section. Get at us on social media, X, Instagram, and TikTok at State of State Pod. Like, comment, subscribe, and turn on notifications. And rate us, as always. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you all so much for joining us. This episode and our entire library of shows is available now on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Also, let us know what you think of the show on social media and check out all of our content on X, Instagram, and TikTok. Search for the handle at State of State Pod. State of State is presented by Bet Online and by Blue White Outfitters.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.